This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 3. You're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167 691,
and you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. To the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Garras, Berners. Now, it's pretty cold this week, so cold in fact that we've had our indoor nets called off for the first time.
Oh, crikey. I mean, that's serious problems, mate, if you're getting indoor nets called off for being cold. Was that snow that stopped you, or was it actually the coldness?
It was a bit of both. It's basically a shed with cricket nets in it, so it was pretty cold anyway, but also the guy who runs the centre, lives up in the hills. So he was stuck out in the country, and he decided he could have got down, but he decided it's probably for the best if he just stayed by the fire.
There's a competition on ice, isn't there, in St. Moritz, I think, in Switzerland. They like to have a bit of a bash, cricket on ice.
Yeah, funny enough, they were talking about that on Twitter the other day. They were talking about what's the coldest you've ever been on a cricket pitch. And, of course, people were coming back with ice cricket. And one guy came back and said, well, we played a game on New Year's Day once and it was -9. We had to clear the snow off the wicket. What's the coldest you've ever played a game in, Garris?
Oh, crikey. I reckon it had been about 4 or 5, maybe, in pre-season. We used to have pre-season games in March at Somerset. And I'd say, you know, 4 or 5 degrees would have been probably it. But interestingly, England, I had a practice game out in Delhi recently where the temperature was around that as well. And certainly in conversation with Mr. Peterson, he said that it was just unnatural to be playing with such temperatures as low as that. So his body isn't quite made for those sort of temperatures.
It does get cold in certain parts of India at certain times of the year. Colder than you would think, anyway. Berners, what's your coldest? Ever been in a woolly hat?
I've had woolly hats, gloves. I played in Norfolk about 2 years ago, and it was absolutely Baltic. They put me at point. New ball. Guys just absolutely slashed it, and it's just come towards me, and I just put my hand up, and I was broken for about 4 days. I just waved them through from then on, just sat in the changing rooms, just contemplating never taking part in life again, let alone cricket.
We used to have pre-season at Hampshire, and when it got really, really cold, in the second team dungeon changing room, people used to hide behind the door because nobody wanted to stand up point to Robin Smith when it was under 10 degrees. And inevitably, our rusty bowlers would feed him a sort of diet of long hops outside off stump, and he was pretty good at the cut shot from recollection, so people would hide to get out of the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to master the art of looking like you're going for it, but completely missing it.
I saw some of the Middlesex boys in Lords the other day, and I said, you know, where are you going on pre-season? Thinking they'd come back with the standard Barbados, South Africa kind of response, and they're going to Jersey.
Absolutely. Why not? Eh? It's a good spot, and has a bit of the microclimate of itself. And I was actually with Nick Poppers last week. He was on the level 3 that I was tutoring, and he's over in Guernsey doing some really good work down there. And they've got a couple of pre-season teams going down to Guernsey as well. So, you know, whilst the pennies are a bit tight, you know, we'll come a bit closer to home. Mm.
But speaking of India and temperatures in India, we have the highlight of the traditional Indian domestic season coming up, which is, of course, the Ranji Trophy final, played over 6 days. And it's a bit of a clash of the big boys against the underdogs. We've got Mumbai, who've won it 44 times. I was looking up the other day. They've won the Ranji Trophy 44 times against Saurashtra, and they've never won it. They won the plate once, but they've never won it. So they're up against the big boys, and of course Tendulkar's going to be in the mix, isn't he?
He is, and you know, he'll be definitely looking to bat a lot of those 6 days that are available to him. So you know, it's probably a good opportunity for him to get some good time out in the middle. But the romantic in me really wants Mumbai to come unstuck, to be honest. But a lot of my friends are Mumbai supporters, and a few of the players as well, I know. So I probably have to go with them to win because of their history and their experience. But it would be lovely to see them turned over from a romantic perspective.
Have you got any? Have you got any picks for players who might do well in that situation of the pressure of a final?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting one because, you know, the pressure of a final is obviously there, but because of the length of the competition itself, you know, often those nerves tend to go a little bit, and you don't often get those pressure balls that are the be-all and end-all of the game, you know, that could be the game turners as such. So, you know, it's a nice format to play. Now, I've played a lot of four-day cricket and had one opportunity to play five-day cricket, and whilst you get nervous ahead of the game, you actually settle into it quite quickly and you pick up that tempo. So I think it opens it up to anybody to go well, to be brutally honest with you. And you'd have to look towards the bigger players in Mumbai to make the biggest impact in the game. But I think the length of the game enables anybody to be the match winner ultimately. And, you know, first innings leads often dictate which way the game goes in that sort of format, really.
Mumbai have got Ajit Agarkar as their captain now, haven't they? And he's had some controversy recently, but he just seems to keep putting in the performances at the domestic level. He never really made that breakthrough to the higher level, but he seems to be one of those guys, a bit like Wasim Jaffa, who just keeps churning out the performances at domestic level.
Well, I mean, Ajit is a wily cricketer, and he was always somebody that you looked at when we played against India. And I think that the chat in the room would be that he was somebody you could get after because he was quite short and quite skinny. But he got the ball onto you a lot quicker than you thought, and also had this horrible knack of squirting it into areas, particularly in one-day cricket, and see India home. You know, Wasim Jaffa is a different sort of player, and you know, is somebody who's used to batting long periods of time. So he's gonna go well in that format. Given two opportunities to bat, you'd be disappointed if he didn't make one of those stick and get a big score. So you know, it's looking heavily in their favour, but you just never know. The toss of a coin might help, and obviously that first innings lead is crucial.
Yeah, of course, Mumbai with home advantage, that's going to help them as well. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the course of those 6 days. And I know that even though there aren't many people who go to the grounds to watch the Ranji Trophy games anymore, it's a little bit like county cricket in that there's still a great swell of interest. And that's why, you know, a lot of people follow the games while they're at work, and, you know, they keep the scorecards on their computers and ticking over and watch what's happening. So I think there's still a big appetite for that format of cricket, so which is a great thing, because it's a real unique challenge playing that long multi-day version of cricket. Right, let's go to the yes no round. Berners, you've got the questions this week, three questions, and Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to them, no matter what else we want to say. So let's get started.
Okay, first question: captains default to standard field settings too much?
Yes.
Yes.
Second question: new ODI rules will encourage more skill in placing the ball.
Yes.
No.
Third question: more coaching means more adherence to the manual.
No.
No.
A Okay, it's time for us to answer your questions, your cricket-related questions. And, of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can get all the videos and downloads if you head over to pitchvision.com/academy and have a look at those. So, Bernard, you've got the questions this week vying for the prize.
What's the first one? First question's in from John, and his relates to pre-season indoor training, and he's just saying, with the indoor nets taking place at the moment, do we think that keepers should keep in the nets and add this to as part of the training?
Well, my opinion on this, and I would be interested in yours as well, Gareth, but my opinion on this is that it's quite difficult for a keeper to get much good quality practice when they're doing it in nets with a batsman in the way, because the batsman is not concerned with what the wicketkeeper's doing. So you don't get the chance to catch a lot of balls, because usually the batsman's playing some shots and he's not going to play miss at many or deliberately leave many to let the keeper get any formal practice. And the second problem I have with keeping in the nets is because the bowling is coming so thick and fast, you're going up and down very quickly. So it means that you are you kind of get a sweat on very quickly, which is great for the fitness side of things. But it's not really the same rhythm or the same technical work that you would be able to do with more specific drills. So in the ideal situation, I would not do very much keeping in the nets. I would do more get the keeper to one side and do specific technical drills with them as much as possible. There are certain benefits to it, but in my opinion, I would stay away from doing it unless there really isn't any other option and the only practice you can get is going into the nets.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The most bit of work you're going to do is going to be your technical stuff outside of a net. The reason why we net full stop is to test our skills for validity, really, within a match situation. And it's one of the best ways, particularly when we're playing indoors. We can't replicate centre wicket practices very easily indoors because of lack of space. So by standing behind a batter, even if you don't get many balls, we'll replicate, see if you can replicate those positions with a batter in front, with a bowler bowling at full pelt. And whether you get balls coming through or not is irrelevant. And one of the questions that I always ask my guys that do go into the nets is whether they feel as if they're going to catch every ball, whether they're in good positions, whether they get a good sight of every ball, whether they feel balanced. So I think if you're asking yourself or asking the players that you're working with those type of questions, even if you only get two or three balls come through in a session, if you can be shaping up well, then that's fantastic. And as we all know, keepers get judged on what they miss or what they take. It's a chance ratio, isn't it, that makes a keeper a good or a bad one. So if you are reliable and you catch every opportunity that comes your way, or a vast majority of the opportunities come your way, then you're deemed to be a good keeper. And one of the things about keeping wicket in a net situation is you inevitably only get a few balls to take. So the question is, when those balls do come, are you up to the task? And I think it's a really good sort of additional bit to your technical program to see whether the skills that you practice in a very open fashion, where the ball's going to come through, whether you can replicate that one out of 30 when somebody is batting in front of you. And that's a really good thing to be able to do and to test yourself against. So, yeah, technical drills are absolutely brilliant and have to make up the biggest part of your program. But it's very valuable to stick yourself into a net situation to see whether that one, two, three balls that come through every time you're in a position to take, and when that edge comes along or that chance comes along, that you take it, because you might only get one in the match, but that will be what you'll be remembered by, whether you miss it or whether you take it.
I quite like it as a batsman. When you have a wicketkeeper, it also makes you think a little bit more, like David said. Everyone just goes in there and tries and thrash it around. But when you're facing a spinner, for example, you might not go down the wicket because of the fact that there's a keeper there. So it kind of, the other side of that is that it's quite healthy for a batsman to have him in that environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a way of loading your practice as well by putting different surfaces on a hard floor. So we use bits of carpets or mats which make the ball bounce differently, which again is a really good test for the really good test for the batter, but also brings the keeper into play more readily. as well. So if you've got spinners, for example, by putting a bit of carpet down on the hard floor offers, you know, the ball the opportunity to spin, keeps your spinners interested, and it gives them a positive result, but also makes the game realistic. And as you say, Berners, by having a batter behind the a keeper behind the batter, it does make it more realistic, because if you run down the wicket and you miss it and you get stumped, then people remember that and it makes you accountable. And that's a really good way of practicing. So I would encourage it, but only as part of your program, not the be all and only bit of your program.
And also, you've got to remember, an indoor net's probably only really practical against spinners anyway, because of the distance behind the the stumps is often limited. You hardly want to go in there against someone who's, you know, got a little bit of gas, and you pre-season and get sconed a couple of times or break a finger. That would be totally pointless. So.
Yeah, one of the things I did years ago was I was involved with a thing called the Thorn Lighting School of Merit up at Lourdes. So I used to travel up there every other Saturday, and it used to be for 13 to 18 year olds. And I think I started going when I was 15. And in order to get myself some good practice, I would go and keep wicket in the little one's net. And that did two things, because the seamers were bowling at a pace, even indoors, that allowed me to stand up to everybody. And secondly, the ball was coming through a bit more often as well. So, that was a way that I did my practice. I batted against my peers, my own people, and in fact, people older than me, to test me. And then I went and kept wicket in the junior net and got a really good workout as a result of that. So, you know, if there's ways of doing that within your practice, if you're a wicketkeeper, and I think it's dead valuable to do that.
Now, Berners, that doesn't apply to batting. I don't want you turning up at your cricket club's under 13 session.
Well, I've been known to do some.
And said, Gareth sent me.
You could say that. It would be a fantastic confidence boost for some of those under 13s bowlers there. So that, you know, which would be great. And that would be a good job that you've done for your team there, Berners.
Yeah. I would say as well, if you're in a club or an academy or, you know, a grade setting where the captain is hanging around, or there's a coach and he's hanging around, then it's a good chance to impress as a wicketkeeper as well. If you're going off your own bat and going, right, come on, I want to do some keeping. And then you go down and those couple that do come through to you are taken, especially anything leg side always looks quite impressive. And the captain standing at the other end, or the captain's the guy who's just been stumped on the leg side by you, then, you know, that's doing your case only good, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, I think, you know, people have gone away from keeping wicket in nets, but I reckon for all of the reasons that we've said, it can be a really valuable part of your training program.
Yeah, I would say that I don't particularly like it personally when I'm doing my own practice, but I would prefer to see a wicketkeeper doing wicketkeeping than, say, bowling. If he's not realistically going to be bowling when the season comes, why would you be? Why would you be bothered?
Dust your kit down. Get it on.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't have to keep. Just run up and down a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What's the next question, Berners?
Next question. Well, given his question, it sounds like he's remaining anonymous. It's NCT.
Yes.
But I mean, I read this and my blood started boiling. But so here we go. So it's in from NCT, whoever you are. Hi, should players walk in with the bowler? He's been told recently that walking in puts pressure on the batsman by his club and his school coaches, and he hears that almost everywhere he goes. However, the good old county coach, who's going to change a 3,000-year-old tradition, says you shouldn't walk in and that you should stand still, and it's harder to field when you walk in. So it's a waste of energy, apparently. And I don't know. I think there's probably a method to the madness. It's a bit like saying we shouldn't put tyres on a Formula One car. But let's see what the panel of experts think.
Well, we're a little bit hamstrung by NCT's interpretation of what the coaches have said. What do you think about this, Gareth? The whole walking in idea, is it out of date, or what's the latest thinking?
It's not out of date at all, because as I keep talking about, it's down to the way that people move. And there are certain types of people who will benefit from being in a stationary position and then have bend in their legs for them to power out of that position. And there are people that need to be in a more upright position with more upright legs, which they can be plyometric with the way that they move. So somebody like Paul Collingwood, for example, would be the plyometric person. So he does need some momentum going in towards the batter in order then to move. Whereas somebody like Kevin Peterson would walk in and wouldn't walk in at all, probably, or would have one step and then get himself low and be ready in that low position prior to ball strike. So it's horses for courses. And again, it comes back to learning about your individuals. There isn't a set rule on this, and you've only got to watch people operating around the world. Nick Compton's just gone into the international arena and he fielded at points in the test matches. And it was interesting to see him at ball strike having quite a lot of momentum coming in towards the batter, but then being very, very upright and still moving at that point of contact. Now, that works for him because that's the way that he moves, whereas other people need to be lower and need to be more stationary and loading their leg muscles so then they can push off. So it's exactly the same for keeping as well. And I think with walking in, you can substitute wicket keeping. So the tradition has been that we always bend down and our last thing that comes up from the grounds is our hands. Well, I'm interested to see where the game goes in 10 years, where you have certain people that will continue to do that because it works for them, and other people who will be in a much more upright position, knowing full well if a ball goes low, they can throw their head into that ball and get down there really quickly because they move in a completely different fashion. So, you know, if the county coach is saying that walking in doesn't put any pressure on the batter, he may or may not be right. But actually, the point being is if you learn about the people that you're working with, then you can apply some strategies of whether they walk in or whether they load and get low and be stationary at ball strike and actually become a much better fielding unit from being more individual as opposed to having one prescribed way.
I'll ask you a quick question. You might not know the answer to it, but what do they do? What do the fielders do in baseball?
The answer to that is I don't know. But then I also am aware that baseball aren't familiar with some of the stuff that cricket are now working with in terms of how people move. So I don't. The answer is I don't know. The question that I'll throw back at you is that about 30 years ago, if you were to watch be a bird up in the sky and watch a test match or the first one day international games that were being played and you paused at ball strike everybody's position around the ground and had a look at those positions, you would see very individual ways of doing things. And we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, what the coaching manual has done, and the coaching manual has been very much you must walk in. And the other bit of the coaching manual is you must get low in the field because you're trying to hunt your prey down, for want of a better expression. But the fact is that 30 years ago, people would have either been in their natural upright position or in their natural crouch position. And what we've done as coaches, which we're now getting out of, is apply one way of doing it, which is the desired way of doing it. It's the same as standing at slip. 30 years ago, Dennis Lilly bowling at 90 miles an hour, he had 8 slips in and 4 people were crouched down low and 4 people were standing upright. We wouldn't have that nowadays. Everybody would be crouched down low. So the answer is I don't know about baseball, but I know that we're going back more to the more natural way of people moving.
I would say as well, surely, in my little simplistic mind that I have, that it would also be respondent to where you're fielding as to what you do. So if you're square of the wicket, maybe you're in a subtly different position because the ball's going to be flashing, your reaction time subtly different, so you might well be slow, you know, lower and maybe on the balls of your feet, whereas if you're at mid on and mid off, maybe a subtly different position is needed. For instance, you know, what if you're fielding kind of on the edge of the ring with the guy looking to attack and you might have to suddenly spring up and catch one going over the top of your head. And you've got a lot more time to make that adjustment building in that position.
I, with what we know now, I disagree with that. I think that's a good discussion, but my personal view would be that I disagree with that, Berners. I think and I know that we all have optimal ways that we move. And for example, myself, I need to be on the move for me to be able to dive, to be able to throw, to be able to move most effectively and make my best decisions. So I would need to be upright with my weight on the toes, on the balls of my feet rather than on my heels, irrespective of where I was fielding. And something that's told me that is that when I kept wicket, I got down in the conventional stance, which would load mostly the back of my feet, and I'd be working in a very eccentric, concentric way with my legs bent, like somebody, you know, anybody who's crouching down. But and I was a crap, really poor diver standing back from the stumps. Okay. Whereas if you put me at point and hit the same ball at the same pace at the same distance, I'd be in a more upright position, and I'd very rarely drop a catch, and I'd stop everything because my starting position was more appropriate for me. And so we've all got our own starting position. It's exactly the same when we bat. We mess around with batting stances, but if we find out what our most effective starting position is, then we can stick to that over the course of our career. But people mess around with it. And again, for me, I'm somebody who needs to be upright. I need my head to lead me into my contact area when I bat, and my head to lead me into my contact area when I field the ball and touch the ball in my hands. And I need my weight through the balls of my feet rather than my heels. And that is the same for everybody. You might be somebody whose preference is to have weight on more towards their heels and more, you know. So, but we have to find that out rather than applying one way that may be for a mid-off or a point or a slip or whatever. We have an optimal way of moving. Full stop.
I'm definitely a fence sitter at fine leg. I like to sit on the fence. And then just as he's coming into his bowling stride, I might just fractionally rise off of the fence and then I'll sit back down again.
So would you lead that rising movement with your hips or with your shoulders? So how would you sit up?
I tend to always go with, I drive with my hips just in case.
Yeah.
Just generate that platform that might be necessary to move forwards. But more often than not, I'll just nicely sink back down into my nestled position on the fence.
Excellent. Well, that would make you somebody who predominantly gets their power from pushing off of their heels rather than leaning in and using their head to get their momentum going forward. So great answer. There you go. There's your answer. Always from your heels, pushing in, mate.
Yeah, it depends. If someone was to hand me a PIMS, I'd be slightly off balance, so I might just have to readjust it. But quite versatile. I'm quite a versatile fence sitter.
So that's the way that it is, and you will see that coming in over the next few years, because the research and the evidence and the application within cricket is coming through very rapidly.
Soapbox is brought to you by our beloved coach, 1 Minute of Madness. Hit them hard, coach.
Well, this is based on the feedback that sometimes we get from not only the show, but from the pitchvision.com website. And it's about simplicity. And the reason why I wanted to talk about that particular subject was because often we'll get a comment that says something like, after an article which discusses something in detail, well, you know, cricket's such a simple game. All you need to do is X, Y, and Z. It's sort of saying that everything else is completely irrelevant. But in fact, I would say that although cricket is a game which can be boiled down to something which is very simple, you don't want to make it too simple. You want to make it as Einstein once said, not about cricket, about something different. You want to make something as simple as possible, but no simpler. And if that means you have to put some thought into things and do something in a complex way, as long as it's not overcomplicated, then you're going to be in the right zone for getting things right. That is the end of the show for this week. Before we go, we need to decide on a couple of things, the main one being the winner of this week's competition, which is a prize, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And up for it this week is John's question about keeping in the nets and NCT's question about walking in. Gareth, which did you prefer?
I like them both because they both got me onto passionate areas. That I love, one being the movement of people and the second one being wicketkeeping. But today I'm going to go with wicketkeeping because it's often the neglected art within the game, and hopefully some of our points that we made there will encourage more keepers to get behind the stumps as part of their programme and test themselves to see how reliable they are under pressure, which is what nets are all about.
Yeah, and of course there wasn't a deciding name this week for you. They're both normal names.
So I'm going with John. There you go.
John. You can't get much more centre than that, can you? So, but hopefully John's going to be doing some left of centre thinking and getting some net practice for his keeping. Now, Berners, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show, get their question answered, and also have their chance to win the prize that John just won, how would they do that?
They can give us a call at the number here is 02088 167 691, or drop us an email and the address is coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, that's true. You can also get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and you can subscribe to the show if you want to listen every week. It comes out every Friday. If you head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us in iTunes. Or if you prefer to use a different subscription system, program or device, then you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link and you'll find the details for how to subscribe using the RSS feed. Very simple. It's only a couple of clicks in most cases. So that's all for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, guys.